It's basically the sound of a generation of people gasping for oxygen.
I really believe we're talking about the big trends in business over the next decade.
You don't have a monopoly on all the information, therefore everybody can question.
Emotions are running high. A lot is at stake. You're in a meeting where your career could be decided. How do you exhibit personal leadership when your brain is on fire?
After you get your own emotional regulation knocked out and you can handle whatever snide comment or whatever, if you can sidestep that whole first process of your internal reaction, then you can start to directly dive into what just happened in the moment in their mind.
The man who thinks he has the key to this problem is Sean Webb, the author of the book Mind Hacking Happiness, which is about much more than happiness. It's about personal leadership. It's about understanding what affects you and why things affect you, and also how can you change your perception of that and ultimately your mood from a negative mood to a positive mood.
When you're talking about increasing emotional intelligence and emotional regulation in individuals, I mean, you're just talking about a ton of awesome business benefits. Enhanced EI helps employee productivity, attention to work, job satisfaction, cognitive functioning, enhanced employer-employee relations, decreases turnover, which can be a big expense for large organizations.
But more than just personal leadership, Sean's Webb gives us the keys to unlock performance from those around us. If we can apply these principles to ourselves, we can also apply those to those we work with and distance ourselves from their emotion and help them work through their issues to get them functioning at the highest level. The Talent Angle is brought to you by Gartner for HR Leaders and Talent Neuron. If you'd like to learn more, shoot us an email at thetalentangle@gartner.com. Also, if you have guest ideas, thetalentangle@gartner.com. And if you enjoy our podcast, please go over to iTunes and give us a rating. We appreciate that. It helps us keep backing internally. Sean, warm welcome to the Talent Angle.
Thank you for having me.
You talked about this sort of balance of flipping, right, from constant negativity to perception. But you also shared an example of Navy SEALs at the extreme level who are able to do this. And I thought that would be helpful for our listeners to hear. Well, what did you find from Navy SEALs that they were able to do? And is that a matter of practice, or do they already have the mindset to go there?
The Navy SEALs get some training in the ability to do this, and they get a training in a couple of areas of entering flow in a more conscious process and also downregulating their emotional strife and process. I'm actually working with a couple of Navy SEALs right now who we've decided to do a podcast called Two SEALs and a Walrus. But these guys came to me after reading the Mind Hacking Happiness Red book and said, this training that you've put it together in this book is better than the training that we are receiving from Special Operations Command in Virginia. And so what happens with these guys is they're forced into very difficult situations where they need to regulate their heartbeat, they need to regulate their breathing, they need to regulate their fear response and turn off their sympathetic nervous system to get their parasympathetic back online so they can continue to operate in highly stressful situations, et cetera. And one of the things that has helped these guys that I'm working with the most is their meta-awareness, which is their ability to take their mind and look back in their mind to find out what it's doing and then change what their mind is doing at that moment. And don't let that fancy term scare you. Meta-awareness is something that everybody uses almost on a daily basis. It's just that you've never known what it's called. When you're in that moment of daydreaming and, you know, you're driving around with Brad Pitt and his Ferrari or whatever it is, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, I'm daydreaming. I got to get back to work or whatever it is. That's a moment of meta-awareness. When you take your mind and you look back in on the mind itself and you say, oh, my mind isn't doing the right thing. I need to change what my mind is doing at this moment. That's a moment of meta-awareness. And well, you can do that intentionally. When you run into it accidentally, it's a great way to take control of your mind and redirect what you're doing. But you can also do it intentionally when something is starting to arise or trigger within you, which is important for, you know, business folks and whatnot to be able to do, because when you start to have that emotional reaction in any instance, be it a Navy SEAL or an executive trying to make a tough decision about the direction of his company, you need to be clear of mind to be able to understand all of the things that are coming in from your thinking brain, because there's a grayscale. when your limbic system is firing and you're in a big panic, let's say there's a truck coming at you, okay? Your thinking brain is going to be shut off almost completely, and all of your energy is going to be shunted into your muscles to be able to jump out of the way. Well, there's a sliding grayscale of those things that are really a threat versus those things that are just kind of moderately a threat or on the back burner but are still a pain in your rear and that type of thing. Those, to a certain extent of a grayscale, can shut down your thinking brain and your reasoning brain to where you lose 20% of your action, let's say, or 20% of your thinking brain, which, you know, operating at 80%, you might be able to get along, you might be able to even get a raise, but at the same time, you're not going to be your best self. So you need to be able to handle those things. And so, you know, these SEALs came along and said, hey, you know, we kind of want to hang out and find out a little bit more about this stuff. We might be able to bring it up to Special Operations Command and integrate it into some of the training. But we've been going down that path for a little while with these guys.
So, you know, I find this fascinating, right? Because that distance allows us to sort of detach this almost chemical reaction that's going on, right? When your limbic system's firing, it's stealing energy from the prefrontal cortex.
Yeah.
And that thinking then allows you to then gain some meta-awareness, which then detunes the limbic system even more, which allows us to think more clearly. Now, the other thing that you talked about, though, and I think this was book two, is that it's important to do it, to practice this, not just because we think more clearly, because the prefrontal cortex is in charge and not the limbic system, but also because happiness is the key to high performance. What did you find there?
Well, that's just a lot of public science at this point. You know, there have been a lot of studies that have proven that how we think about happiness is backwards, because a lot of us have been fed this story, this equation, that happiness will come when you have all of your external conditions set. So when you have your right income, when you have your right house, when you have your right spouse, when you have the right number of kids and the right number of dogs and everything is balanced in your life, then and only then you will find happiness. And the reality is actually the opposite is true. Hedonic adaptation is this thing within our nervous system that is connected with how our nervous system works, because our nervous system only reports on the differences in things. Mm-hmm. So when you walk into a room and there's gas in the room and you can smell the gas, your nervous system reports, okay, I can smell this gas in this room now because it wasn't there just a second ago when you were outside of the room. And that's the only time it will ever report. And for the first 10 minutes, you'll smell the gas. And then after that, you won't smell the gas anymore because your nervous system is only reporting on the two times that it measured. Time one to time two, the gas went from zero to high, so it started reporting. But time two to time three, the gas was high to high, so it stops reporting. And so you stop smelling it, even though the gas is going to kill you. So, you know, you wake up in the middle of the night, you smell gas, get everybody out of the house, because if you walk around thinking it's a dream, it's going to kill the whole family, that type of thing. Well, the same thing is true in your nervous system on happiness. When you find happiness, and they found this in lottery winners even, after 1 year of a lottery winner's life, they're back to their baseline level of happiness, where the money went from zero to high. And for a while, you're very happy. But then time two to time three, the money is high to high, and they're not very happy anymore. They're back to their base level happiness because they're not looking at the right things to discover happiness or foster happiness within them. And so the science is showing that the opposite is actually true. If you want to succeed, if you want to be operating at your highest efficiency, you got to find happiness first before trying to set any of these external conditions, because regardless of the external conditions that you set, let's say you become the most successful person in the world, you're only going to be happy with it for a little while. And then after a while, your nervous system is going to say, well, I was the happiest, or I was the most successful in the person in the world yesterday. I'm the most successful person in the world today. What's the difference? And there is no difference. And so it's not going to create a happiness response for you, because there is no difference between time two and time three. You have to find that intrinsic happiness. You have to find the intrinsic motivation and the well-being within. You need to find the eudaimonic happiness that then allows you to flourish regardless of what you're doing. So science is now showing that if you want to be successful, if you want to be that, you know, very financially successful business executive, or if you want to be that very happy relationship person, you want to be that very effective parent, you want to be whatever it is, you find happiness first, and happiness helps you be at your best level.
Now, how does, you know, you talk about the mind tricks us, right? What is the trick of the mind that creates happiness where people have actually no reason, you know, it's all existential. There's no real reason for us to be unhappy.
Yeah, that goes into a deeper, more philosophical discussion about how your mind works and how you can change how your mind works to get to that point where it creates happiness automatically for you. And that goes back to what I call the equation of emotion, right? Your equation of emotion, if you're having regular emotional responses such as happiness, sadness, fearfulness, anger, worry, regret, etc., you have all these bodily emotions that are results of the two variables that we talked about at the top of the podcast, which were your expectation or preference about something versus your perception about something. Now, your expectation or preference about something is directly connected to your sense of self, and it works really easy. Anything that you decide or that your brain decides, your mind decides, is part of your definition of self. So It's either your body or it's your friends or it's your family or it's your job or it's your expectations about the next project or it's your expectations about income or the amount of money that you have in the bank or whatever it is. All of those things go onto this thing called your self map. And your self map then automatically has an expectation or preference associated with it that says, okay, everything on this map has to be held at status quo or increased in value, or we're going to have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what your mind says. So every part of my body, my health, everything connected with that has to be cool, or we're going to have a problem. Everything with my family and my friends and their bodies and their health has to be cool. Everything with my income, everything with my work projects, everything that, you know, people that say things about me and say nice things about me, those are expectations that fill one half of your emotional landscape for the rest of your life. And then the other thing that decides how well you're feeling or how good you're feeling or bad you're feeling in the moment is your perceptions of things that are coming in as compared to that big old laundry list of self stuff. So you can do two things to increase your happiness for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You can try to basically manage every one of your perceptions that comes in every few seconds for the rest of your life, which seems to me to be a little exhausting, although there are a lot of people that try to promote with reappraisal therapy and things like that, you know, let's not see the guy cutting you off in traffic as a personal insult. Let's assume that he's on his way to the hospital to see a dear loved one and you want to give him your lane at that point. Those things are effective in acute situations. But for me, my perspective is if you change the big old laundry list of things that you define as your mind's sense of self,
yeah,
all of a sudden, then you have less perceptions that you have to manage coming into you. A big part of happiness and well-being is simplifying the things that you're attached to mentally to say, I am this or I am that or I am not this or I am not that, to just say, no, I'm going to reject that whole process. And then at this point, a lot of the perceptions that can come in via, you know, my surroundings aren't going to ruin my day anymore.
Interesting. So, I mean, if you list them out, I mean, the process looks like I'm going to list all these things out. People I care about, ideas I'm attached to, beliefs that I have, my physical body.
Yeah.
And that becomes the map of self.
Yes.
When we do that, now we can also, that just gives us detachment, right? Then we can see, oh, sense of self is actually just basket of stuff.
Yes.
Then the other thing is intensity of perception.
Yes.
And this is where constant negative perception can really throw a wrench into this, right? Because if you have this constant negative perception that's really high, it's gonna tweak even things that are, you know, low on your self map, right?
If you ask me who won or lost the last game or if they made the playoffs last year, I can't tell you, because you know if they're on, I will watch them. If they're not, you know, it's totally off my plate, off my mind. I'm not thinking about them very much, so. You could map that as the Chicago Bears are on the very, very edge of my self map. If there's something going on there, I might be interested enough that if there's absolutely nothing else going on, I might watch the game. But beyond that, I don't have an attachment to the Bears. But if I have a super powerful perception that comes in against the Bears, I'm going to feel worse about that situation than I would, you know, regardless of where the bears were on my self-maps. To use a better example, let's say, this is the one I use in the book, it's just readily available from my mind. My son is out on the lawn, out the window. I'm looking at him. And I see two different scenarios. One is Uncle Craig in a bear costume running across the lawn. My perception level of that is going to be pretty low as far as a danger. You know, I might be worried that Uncle Craig's going to trip at the last second, fall into my son and injure him, that type of thing. But I know there's nothing really bad that's going to occur if my son's out in the middle of the lawn with Uncle Craig in a bear costume running across towards my son. However, if a real bear is running across the lawn towards my son, now the perception level is much higher, mm-hmm. much more powerful. Yep. And so my emotional reaction is going to be much more vehement. I'm going to be grabbing a baseball bat on the way out, you know, to try to save my son from the bear.
Yeah. And, you know, the place I see this playing out the most, and I think this gets into like our Facebook problem too, is in sort of the outrage world of politics right now, right? Where things that people would never care about, right? Right. Like under Obama, and Obama does something and you have a negative perception of Obama, suddenly you care about that thing.
Right, exactly.
Suddenly that matters. Or Trump, you know, the same way, we see that playing out. So I love this because it gets to what I call personal leadership, right? Which is, how can we, what's our mental model for approaching problems when we're getting worked up, and how can we work through those to clear our mind? And then how can we make good choices? And one of the things I found fascinating about reading The Perception is it aligned very well with Sean Acor's work. He wrote The Happiness Advantage some time ago. And he said, you know what the real trick is to pick the best and most useful reality or the most useful perception in any situation.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, too often we try to kind of report on what we see, like, oh, this is bad and this hurts me, rather than say, what's the most useful way to think about this? Does that resonate with you?
It does. And that, you know, that's basically emptying one equation of emotion, right? Because your brain can process multiple simultaneous equations of emotion. In that, you know, even at a complex situation, like let's say you're a 40-year-old woman who is about to get divorced, and she has mixed feelings about that because maybe it's going to be negative for the kids. She's worried about how it's going to affect the kids, but at the same time, it's a good thing for her because it was an abusive relationship and yada, yada, yada. All these individual equations of emotion get processed simultaneously based on her perceptions of the various facets of the situation that are occurring. Mm-hmm. Well, when you're taking your perception and you're changing to the way you look at things, in that you're going to reject or not focus on a certain perception, and you're taking a different perception and you're putting it back into your equation of emotion, that equation of emotion is going to give you your main reaction associated with that moment. And so the better you can select your perceptions, the better your outcome is going to be. And now, the better your outcome is depending or completely determines how well your brain is going to work and what you're going to focus on in the next number of minutes to be able to get through whatever issue is arising.
So this is really fascinating to me, too, because we had another guest on, and they would have executives go through a dreads and desire exercise.
Mm.
And using dreads and desires, essentially, I would think, uncover the kind of sense of your map of me, right?
Yeah, certainly.
Because what they found is that executives are often reactive mode. They're either trying to chase a desired outcome, or they're trying to run away from looking a certain way. And because everyone's functioning from dreads and desires, and you get these people in a group, and you know they're not aligning well, it's those dreads and desires that take over and lead to dysfunction.
Yeah, how that is easily true with most people, because it's simply how their nervous system works, right? When you're talking about your sense of self, a lot of times you have a good idea of what that is, but a lot of times you don't. And a lot of times the things that you don't realize are on your self map are the things that come up and bite you and interrupt your ability to get the job done or do whatever it is that you want to be doing next. Yeah. And so, you know, when you're analyzing your dreads and desires, you're basically bringing into your conscious awareness, okay, I am these things on my self map, or I do care about these things. So these things are important to me and these other things aren't important to me. The more that you have visibility into that, that brings you into that place of meta awareness to be able to say, oh yeah, I have a dread that people are going to think of me or talk about me in a certain way. So yeah. Maybe I need to do this today differently than I would have. Maybe I don't need to yell at this guy. Maybe I need to, you know, handle this in a different fashion. You know, that meta awareness, that little bit of being able to look back in on your mind gives you that space to say, you know what? No, I'm not going to take this knee jerk reaction that my mind has given me and run with it. I'm going to do something else with it. And that makes you a more effective leader.
Yeah, no, it that perfectly makes sense, because in a sense, you're using dreads and desires to uncover that, right? And then if you think about that, you can do it for yourself. But what if you ask that of your direct reports, right? And how much of a better manager would you be in managing their process, right?
Yeah, and it does come down to training, right? If you want to show anyone how to do anything, let's say, you know, put a widget in a box in a certain way and pack it up for shipping to wherever. You got to show somebody how to do it. You got to teach them how the widget might fit into the box in a certain way and how the packaging goes in and how it needs to be taped up and where the label needs to be put on and stuff like that. It's simple stuff, but you got to teach them. You got to show them. And the same is true on emotional regulation. The same is true on leadership. The same is true on setting your emotional responses aside to be able to get to the best answer for the business objectives that you have in front of you. And so training, it has to occur. You know, a training of some sort needs to, an emotional intelligence training needs to be put in place to where the executives under you or the leadership teams under you are understanding about their own limitations, how their mind works, what their mind is going to throw up in front of them, how the minds of their subordinates are working, which is even more important, because if you want to break down leadership, yeah, into its most fundamental core functions, good leadership anyway, you don't lead by fear. You don't lead by turning people's thinking brains off.
Yeah,
you lead
yeah,
by setting the examples, and you lead by understanding the intrinsic motivation of the people under you so that you can set their perceptions in place that they will take action from within their own motivation to help you or help the business goals. That's leadership. That's yeah, getting people to be able to take action if you were not in the room to forward the goals that you guys have agreed that you're going to try to attain. That's a real leadership. And so when you can understand the intrinsic motivations, and when you can understand the limiting beliefs that are going to be arising in this person's mind or your team's mind, when you understand the emotional roadblocks that are going to be coming up in these individuals and teach them how to manage those and get by those and continue to operate at a high efficiency, that's leadership, at least to me.
Yeah, no, I love that too. So now help me as a manager work with, you know, my direct reports. I want to go down this route. How do I start from your perspective trying to work with my direct reports?
Well, you want to have everybody go through a basic emotional intelligence program, I think, because it's not until you can see your mind operating and understand why your emotions are arising the way they are to be able to, you know, it's not until you have that visibility that you can then start to take control of those visibility or control that operation and at least understand why it's occurring to give you that space in between your reaction and your observation of it to give you a little breathing room, at least internally. Right. So I would think step one would be you got to let people know what they don't know. Right. You got to go from that unconscious incompetence to the conscious incompetence. Right. Mm-hmm. That's the step one of, you know, OK, by the way, guys, there's this thing called emotional intelligence. And the Harvard Business Review says it's twice as important to you for your success as being smart and knowing your job. You know, so, you know, there are hundreds of articles that say or studies that say when you increase emotional intelligence, you increase your personal output by 21% or more. And, you know, your job satisfaction goes way up. Your internal issues with HR go down. You know, all these amazing things inside of a professional organization occur when you increase your emotional intelligence. The first step is that, oh, yeah, by the way, guys, this emotional intelligence thing exists and you need to know something about it. And so sit down here for this video series or maybe we'll do a live lecture in front of, you know, whiteboard or whatever it is that fits your organization. You got to get those people knowing of how their mind works so that they can start to take control of their mind and take control of their motivations.
So help me now. Walk me. Can you coach me through a situation?
Sure.
Okay, so I'm in a situation at work, and this is going to be fictional, but probably has some root in reality somewhere back in the day, right? So I am working with a colleague who I have to collaborate with.
Yes.
And this colleague just pisses me off a lot, right? I feel like he's constantly stepping on my point of view, in that I come into our meetings and I'm kind of wound up already. Yep. I'm on the alert for things that could attack me. And because of that, I'm actually not doing my job well.
Yes.
And I think this describes, you know, where a lot of people find themselves. And I've got to solve this puzzle, but I can't seem to get past the emotional trigger point that makes me act weird, like a jerk maybe, right? And then you act weird, and then they think you act weird, and that's because you are acting weird, and, you know, then you get this whole cycle.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of reminded of Cesar Millan and his dog training television show, that he's like, you know, dogs are usually not the problem. It's usually the human that's the problem.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so when you walk into a room like that and you're already on the edge of being triggered, like you're expecting to be triggered by this person, then the first problem in that scenario is you. And you need to take full stock of what's going on within yourself, and you need to be able to handle your energy management, because the thing that you don't want to do is bring the wrong energy into that interaction and, you know, make it worse than it normally would have been. So, you know, a higher level of emotional intelligence for you is going to be step one in that situation, in that, you know, when you can take control of your mind's processes and you can sidestep the anger, you can sidestep the frustration, you can sidestep all of the reactions that your mind wants to give you, then you can focus on narrowing in on getting their focus to where it needs to be versus whatever they're doing that would have normally upset you. Now you're playing the game at a whole different level. Now so you're above the reactions that that person would normally evoke from you. And now you're starting to manage their interactions with the group or their interactions with you, and you can be much more effective because your brain isn't wanting to shut off your thinking brain. Your brain wants to, you know, create some kind of vindication or some kind of counterpunch or some kind of, you know, topspin forehand back at them. You know, when they fire a shot at you, you sidestep all of that because all of that is going to be wasted energy. And so at the point that you can sidestep that, then you can start to analyze and break down, okay, what's their motivation? Why are they saying, why did they just make that last statement? And you can look into their mind and you can say, okay, what are the two things? We know that there are going to be only two variables. It's going to be your expectation or preference about something versus your perception about something. What are those two things in that person's mind that maybe is offset a little bit? Maybe I need to deliver him a perception, him or her a perception that will balance his equation of emotion. Maybe it's some kind of a deep-seated, well-rooted concern about the project or whatever it is, and he just doesn't have the social skills to be able to deliver it in a fashion that's pro-social or productive. But maybe there's an underlying cause there that we need to get to. Well, you're not going to be able to see that unless you're able to look into that person's mind and see the two variables that are causing their reaction, because every human being's actions on the face of the planet are going to be a result of their expectation or preference about something versus their perception about something. Everything that they do, everything that they say, everything that they think is going to be based on those two variables. And if you can get your reactions out of the way in that interaction and be able to look into their mind to understand what's going on in their mind to create their actions in the first place, you're going to be able to head off a lot of problems before they even become problems.
Yeah, so let me see if I can put this in your equation, into your equation, right? The expectation has to do with my sense of me, right? Me.
Yeah. So and the things that you think are important, including your business goals or including the way you think that things should be done. You know, a lot of things we don't realize get onto our self map.
So then writing out what your self map is in this situation would be helpful. Like, what are the things about me that are really getting threatened here?
Yeah, totally.
Right. So step one is, and that gives me some distance, right? That's the meta awareness. And by the way, this plays really well into Tasha Urich's work about self-awareness, and we've had her on too. And you know, she calls it the meta skill of the new decade.
Yep.
And so, step one is really saying, what's on my self map? Why does this piss me off?
Yep.
Right? And being aware of that. And then part two is the perception. And your perception is this person's out for themselves, and you've probably attached a negative perception to their actions and their words at this point.
Yep.
So now I've got to stop and say, what does their point of view look like? And how does that affect my perception of the situation?
Yeah, and you'll only be able to do that after you've practiced internal emotional regulation for a little while, right? The plasticity that we've been talking about.
Yep.
Like if you're brand new to this and you're brand new to this topic, you're brand new to the subject and the ability to be able to internally manage your mind and things like that, it's going to be tough. Just like, you know, playing the piano for the first time is going to be tough, or shooting a basketball is going to be tough, or, you know, working a crossword puzzle or whatever it is, it's going to be tough the first time you do it. The more you do it, the better it's going to be for you, the easier it's going to be for you. So, but yeah, that's basically the process that you follow is after you get your own emotional regulation knocked out, so to speak, and you can handle whatever snide comment or whatever weird way that they want to present thing or their interruption about, you know, whatever it is that you're not talking about at the moment. If you can sidestep that whole first process of your internal reaction, then you can start to directly dive into what just happened in the moment in their mind.
So, all right, now help me with this internal emotional regulation. I'm a newbie, right? Which I am.
Yep.
And I'm in this mode where I'm getting triggered all the time. I've got stressful work and I've got stressful home things going on.
Yep.
And I feel like I can't get space. Now, you know, if I go to any sort of website, everyone's going to say, well, practice mindfulness and meditate.
Yes.
Which I think is really a detuning exercise.
Yes.
In the way that we're talking about this. How would you say to practice internal emotional regulation?
Yeah, well, the mindfulness and the meditation is certainly one path that you can take, and it is an independent path from the path that I put out in Mind Hacking Happiness Red Book, and it is very effective. I mean, let's not take away from the effectiveness of meditation and mindfulness training, et cetera, but what meditation and mindfulness are at their base functionality is a meta-awareness practice. It is the ability to take your mind and turn your mind back in on what your mind is doing and then change what your mind is doing. If you're sitting in there in a meditation room and you're breathing and you're focusing on your breath, you're taking your attention and you're focusing it on your breath. And then when, you know, the thoughts about what you need to do for this afternoon's meeting or what you're going to have for lunch or, you know, whatever it is comes in and distracts you, then you take that awareness of that thought and you say, okay, hold on, let's put that aside. I'm going to put my attention back on my breath. Well, that's a meta-awareness practice. Hmm. And so what I present in the Mind Hacking Happiness books is simply a different meta-awareness practice. It can be exercised independent of or additive to mindfulness and meditation and things like that. This is a different way of basically taking your mind, turning it back in on yourself, understanding why it is you're having the emotions that you have. And now the critical function there is, which is different from meditation and mindfulness, at the point you put an understanding to your emotional process, rather than simply just putting it aside with breathing or, you know, trying to calm your body, calm your senses, et cetera, when you put an understanding to your emotion, that emotion stops being sent from the limbic system, period. It is resolved. It is over. There is no more dealing with it. It's not repressing the emotion. It's not putting it off to handle it another time. It is understanding and processing the emotion, which is a portion of the nervous system. It's a function of the nervous system that is designed for us not to drop important balls, right? Mm-hmm. Or important things through the cracks. It is, hey, this is an important thing. It could be a threat. Let's talk about this. Let's think about this. And so if you let those things go unresolved, that's what causes long-term stress. That's what causes long-term ailments. It puts you in the hospital. You know, they say that over 80% of the hospital visits are caused by stress-induced illness. Well, that's because there are so many little emotional things that haven't been resolved over the number of years that you're still carrying around, that, you know, you still don't forgive your mom for something that she did or said a number of years back, or you still have a problem with your old boss or whatever it was that you just never let go. You've never gotten the apology and you've never been able to give yourself the apology of that person who was unable to apologize to you, so you could just let it go. But when you're talking about getting in and understanding your emotional process and understanding the two exact variables that come together to make your anger, that come together to make your worry, your stress, your emotional response associated with whatever that situation was, at the point that you can understand those things, they turn off and you don't have to deal with them ever again. And so that's the big difference between like a mindfulness and a meditation practice. Those things help do that as well over a longer period of time. But if you can look into your mind, into the heat of the moment, you can turn your prefrontal cortex back on. within a few seconds and start to, you know, as you metabolize your anger hormones and things that have dumped into your bloodstream, your adrenaline, as the things metabolize, you'll be able to start to get back to your problem much quicker than you normally would if you had to wait until tonight to meditate or Saturday whenever the meditation group meets or whatever it is. You can handle those things much quicker and get on with your life much faster.
Yeah. And the other thing I really liked here is it's a direction for your subconscious mind, right? If you start doing this, you said what you're signaling is actually to the mind to move past the emotional stuff so I can get to work on the real stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Because a lot of people don't realize emotional processing is the majority of your brain. And in fact, almost every portion of your brain's processing could officially be classified as emotional processing because it's always comparing one thing to another, your nervous system. And if you can turn that stuff down, the unnecessary portion of that, if you can turn a lot of that stuff off, then you can live life much more effectively, much more happily.
All right, now we've been hiding something behind the curtain here, which is this. Like, psychology is not your bag.
No.
So I've let this, you know, got to play out because I'm very interested in it. It makes perfect sense and intuitive sense. And, you know, I wanted to have the conversation. But the reality is you didn't come at this through the world of you know, the university thought world.
No, I didn't. I came at it from a 180 degrees opposite direction. And so for the longest time, it was like, holy cow, you know, the guy out of absolutely, you know, left field comes in and helps explain the process of emotions. It's just one of those things that happens. You know, the best protein folder in the world. And, you know, there are chemists who have gone, you know, 12 years in school to help learn how to fold proteins, which helps them create brand new pharmaceuticals and things like that to create cures for diseases. The best protein folder in the world happens to be a receptionist in the UK. And they found that out by creating a game that mimicked folding proteins. And she played the game and just happens to be the best player in the world at it. Has absolutely no training at all in, you know, folding proteins or what proteins are, et cetera. She's just playing this design game and she happens to be the best protein folder in the world.
Well, you know, it reminds me of a book called Psycho-Cybernetics. I don't know if you're aware of it, by Dr. Maxwell Maltz, who was not a psychologist either, right?
Right.
He was actually a surgeon to make yourself look pretty. What is that?
Plastic surgeon.
Plastic surgeon, yeah. And he was exploring why people were unhappy after they got plastic surgery, and he came up with this model. Can I test my model that I built against you?
Sure.
So here was my model around it. There's a stimulus that happens, right? Something that happens. That's filtered through a mood that we're in, like kind of a, you know, are you in a negative mood already or a positive mood?
Yep.
Which together, the stimulus and the mood then gets applied against a perception that you already have of that outside thing.
Yes.
Which creates thoughts and feelings, right? And gets the limbic system going.
Yep.
That's applied against your sense of self.
Yep.
Which then creates thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
Which then leads to actions or reactions in a new mood.
Yes.
Does that map to your model in my elongated version here?
Yeah, most definitely. In fact, it's very congruent with the artificial emotional intelligence model that we're working with.
Interesting.
In that, yeah, there's, you know, there are a lot of, you know, what we talked about earlier is a very simplistic way of explaining the process. But, you know, when you're talking about perception, yeah, there's a lot of things that go into the perception side of the equation, which is, you know, your mood, your existing mood that you're coming in with, a number of things that can sway your perception. I mean, even your internal chemical makeup during that day. Maybe you're just, you know, you have low blood sugar and you're ready to trigger on absolutely anything. You know, there's a lot of things that go into creating the perception side of the equation of emotion. And I think a lot of those things were mentioned with the model that you just presented.
So this has been a fantastic conversation. I want to keep you any longer because I know that you have to run at some point. But if I wind this back, my big takeaways are, number one, I think people feel like they're the victim of their minds sometimes.
Yes.
And they feel like their mind has imposed upon them. And one of my big takeaways in listening and reading your work is that, look, if we understand how the mind is processing, we'll feel less like the victim.
Yeah, if you look, your mind is the most powerful tool in the universe that you have, and particularly the most powerful tool in the universe that you have to make an amazing life for yourself.
Mm.
The most complex tools in the universe that I know of, I would like to have a manual for them. And I would like to understand how they work so that I don't hurt myself and so that I don't have any unintended consequences. If you want to understand your mind, I think that is probably and should be your life's number one priority. Because everything that comes out of your mind at that point, everything that comes out of that tool, is then the result of your life. It is the result of your happiness. It is the result of how much sadness and fear and worry and regret and all the things that you have to deal with. All of those things come from your mind. And so at the point that you can understand this most complex tool that you have in the universe, the better your results are going to be.
So point one, I think, is really important. But point two is just as important, which is we can create kind of, I call them in the executive coaching world, virtuous cycles and toilet bowl cycles, right?
Right.
The toilet bowl cycle would be in this case when you have these negative perceptions that are coloring the way you see the world. It exacerbates this feeling of being stressed and under attack, which keeps that system hot, right?
Yeah.
And now it's being triggered all the time. And now because it's being triggered, I'm seeing more negativity and I'm in a spiral.
Yes.
But it spirals the other way too. Can you paint the spiral that's positive?
Yes, you can. In fact, you know, a lot of your emotional reactions will feed right back into another equation of emotion, which is how I kind of model the whole thing. You know, your equation of emotion starts with your expectation or preference about something that's connected with your self map. And then you have this perception that comes in from outside that creates some type of interaction. And then you have an emotional output. Whether that emotional output is positive or negative really doesn't matter. Well, that emotional positive or output, a positive or negative output, can then become another perception that feeds right into another equation of emotion, then snowballing either a positive or negative effect. And so you got to be really careful about those things. You have to understand the process because you need to put a pin in the things that can spiral out of control in a negative fashion and maybe fan the flames a little bit on the things that can go into a positive spiral.
Yeah. And my big takeaway for our listeners is, look, this is personal leadership at the baseline level, right? And that personal leadership affects your ability to be resilient, to think clearly, but then also this understanding helps you work with other people as well.
Yeah, most definitely, because you need to be able to handle your internal responses to be able to hold yourself in a space of high effectiveness. And then when dealing with other people, you need to understand the process of their mind so that you can become a true leader and lead with their intrinsic motivation versus trying to create some kind of external motivation. The science shows when you try to bribe people with money, it doesn't work. When you try to bribe people with big titles and more responsibility and whatnot, it doesn't work. What works is getting their intrinsic motivation, getting their intrinsic goals aligned with your external business goals, getting them motivated to do things for their own benefit is the way to go. And so your understanding their mind is the only way you're going to be able to do that.
Now, anything we missed, Sean, that's a big takeaway that I had glossed over or just haven't addressed?
When you're talking about increasing emotional intelligence and emotional regulation in individuals, I mean, you're just talking about a ton of awesome business benefits that just, you know, we could go on for hours where enhanced EI helps employee productivity, attention at work, job satisfaction, cognitive functioning, enhanced employer-employee relations. It decreases turnover, which can be a big expense for large organizations, 70% reduction in absenteeism for 3 years. I mean, there's a whole ton of science that if you dig into a little bit on emotional intelligence and emotional regulation, it will translate to your business, which is just amazing. So, but I mean, regarding our today's discussion, I mean, yeah, I think we've covered a bunch of stuff.
So where can people find out more about you, Sean?
Well, you can pick up the Mind Hacking Happiness books, which you can find at Amazon and Audible. I did the recording on Audible. You can find out more from the webpage mindhackinghappiness.com. And we have a couple of podcasts that are out, the Mind Hacking Happiness podcast and these two Navy SEALs that love the Mind Hacking Happiness books. We're now doing a podcast focused on consciousness expansion and emotional intelligence. And but I gotta warn you, that's an adult podcast. There is adult language, and as you can imagine, these Navy SEALs are quite raw on a lot of things. but we have a good time talking about that stuff.
A fantastic, Sean. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us on The Talent Angle. If you'd like to find out more about us, just search for Talent Angle and you will see transcripts and all of our podcasts. You can also go over to iTunes, and you've enjoyed our shows. Please take the time to give us a rating. That helps us get backing internally and also helps us get great guests. And thank you so much for your support. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.